As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Then up jumps Humpy Sivillum, and he says, I think somehow, be the way they're all going on tonight, 'cause I'm looking for a row. Now listen here, Grace, if you want your face, you better not shout or bawl, 'cause a lot of hard shows gonna be here tonight to respect the Ragman's Ball.
The song The Night of the Ragman's Ball was collected by Colm O'Loughlin from a ballad singer in Thomas Street, Dublin, in 1913. He published it in his book Irish Street Ballads. In the introduction to his book, Colm says that of one or two of our songs, it may well be that the authors are still living. So strong the tradition, so true to type are such songs as Bachelor's Walk and The Night of the Ragman's Ball, that it seems almost natural and fitting that no record should remain of their authors.
Well, Ash Street was all cobblestone from the top to the bottom of it. And we lived in 37, the kiln. And our front, the front of the house led out onto the kiln, and the back of it led into Ash Street. And we always had to go into Ash Street to go up to the house. And we lived at the top. Tommy lived in the top pair front, and my grandmother lived in the fourth pair front in Ash Street. And that's where Tommy wrote the song of the Ragman's Ball. During an hour, his break from the corporation. He'd go into Tommy when he'd be at his break, and you wouldn't think he'd be minding you, but he'd be writing a song on you.
Just pay attention for a while, me good friends one and all. I sing to you a verse or two about a famous ball. The ball was given by some friends who lived down in Ash Street, in a certain house in the Liberty where the right men were to meet. The names are called at 7 o'clock, every man was on the spot. And to show respect to the manager, every ragman brought his mutt. Well, I must say that I brought mine at 8:25, and the first stand up was Kieran and Grace to tell me I was too late.
Well, there were some great characters in Ash Street and some great neighbours. We had anything you wanted in Ash Street. We had tinkers, tailors, tinsmiths, rope walkers. Anything you mentioned, we had it. We talkers and fishermen, we racemen and touts, we'd everything in it. We even had houses where they kept girls, but of course not like now. And the girls went about their business, they went, nobody knew anything about them. And any houses on the far side of Ashley were all for married couples. And I can tell you there were some characters in that too.
Well, now who were the Grace family? Who was Kieran Grace?
Kieran Grace, He lived in the top head, in the top front room. Now, there were no trades, you know what I mean? There were only ordinary labourers. No grandeur, no trades or anything like that. Just one big happy family. If your mother had nothing today, if my mother had it, your mother would have it. If your mother was going to have a baby, all her children would be taken away from her and looked after till she got up on her feet. And there was never a door shut in that street. Everyone was neighbours. If they had a bit of a bust up in the night time, maybe kill one another. They come down and shake hands the next morning, you don't get a pint. There was no ending in it.
But you mentioned something about the Grace family and a funeral.
Oh, he was a Liberty Hearse man.
Kieran Grace
was a Liberty Hearse man. He used to carry the carpets at Glasnevin. And they started out about 6 in the morning. They wouldn't land in Glasnevin until about 12. Because they'd be stopping at every public house they'd meet, taking a jab. At that time, you could get a loop line for 3 halfpence, and you'd get a glass for a penny, a pint for twopence.
Now me and me uncle Davey come up at 7:45. We were at the ship in a handcart all the way from Donna Bay. We hadn't a butt to stick in our gut and we landed in Carman Hall. But there we were sure of a package or two the night of the Ragman's Ball. Now up jumps Humpy Soodlum and says, I think somehow, the way you're going on all the night you're looking for a row. But look here, Grace, if you want your face, you better not shout and bawl. There's a lot of hard shots be here tonight to respect the Ragman's Ball.
Oh, Humpy Soodlum, he was an old man, used to go round, little low-sided man with a cap and thing. And when he'd meet you, you'd turn up your head and singing a Soodlum, a Soodlum, a Soo. I lost the love of Mary Jane. Soodlum, a Soodlum, a Soo. He used to go round singing.
Soodlum was a man. He wasn't hardly fresh for joy, and he was really built blocky, a blocky type of a man. And he used to go around gathering the rags, and he sat outside of the pubs and he'd sing to see if he'd get a couple of coppers. If he got drunk, it used to take 6 policemen to take him, strange as it seems. And the only time I ever heard his real name was John Breen.
We all sat down to some fish and chips and every man was there. And as a part of honour, Billy Bolin took the chair. He swiped the chair and sold it to Miss Good in Carman Hall, and he danced on the face of Carman Grace the night of the Ragman's Ball. Now, says my, when you're a queer one and Billy your heart to bait, when up jump lies a bowl and dance, she told her to hold her place. Well, my way, my, the clout at her, she missed and struck the wall, and the two of them went in the ambulance the night of the Ragman's Ball.
It mentions in the song that they sat down to fish and chips. They would have bought those. They wouldn't have cooked the fish and chips.
No, they wouldn't cook them. They would buy them, and where they buy them, it'd be Rocco in Thomas Street. Rocco, he was an Italian, a man that size, he was that size. When he'd walk, his stomach would walk, was a shake like that. I remember him well. Do you remember him?
No, Mary, I don't.
Do you know?
No.
Ah, oh, me lovely.
I didn't know where Thomas Street had come up here. I didn't, I always went that way.
Well, there was no chip or fish, or no, he was the only one. No fish, chip shops anywhere. Rocker in Thomas Street. And he'd walk like that, he was the one who was. And he would just put it in.
Maybe he was going.
No one was clean that time now, remember? There was no clean in the Sims or that.
Maybe he was going up to Coom.
No, the poor rapper, he's dead.
He might have been going over to Coom.
And he'd give you a lovely fish and a lovely load of fish.
Now I never knew where Thomas he was, and I mean, he's like, so I come up to it.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. Do you not remember that?
No.
And how would he give you the chips, Mary?
He put them into a big lump of paper, and there'd be the news of the world or any kind of paper at that time. Now, you know, there was no sanitary or anything like that.
Listen, Mary, that shop, Rockets, that would have been there when you were about 10, would it? That'd be...
That's right, I'd be about 10. That's right.
That'd be the time of the song.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's the right, that's right. I'd be about 10 year old. And, he was the only chipper around the vicinity. No, there was no one else had chips or fish, only Rocker.
Well, now, Billy Boland.
He was a rag merchant. He owned a marine store on the Coombe. Some of his relations is alive yet, a lot of his relations, and his wife Liza. They owned a marine store.
Just to make the thing a swell affair, we brought some friends we knew. We brought a blank or Tweely Lynn and Big Dan Kenny too. And a gallon Jack Tar smoked his cigar and slipped coming through the hall. He lost his bag and all he swagged the night of the Ragman's Ball. To keep the house alive, me boys, we brought some music too. We brought some Tommy Rollins and his old tin whistle too. He played that night with all his might until the dawn, but we couldn't find many to dance with Dan Kenny the night of the Ragman's Ball.
Now, who was Blind Gord Whelan?
That was a relation of my granny's. He was a cousin of me, Tommy's, Gord Whelan. He was a relation of me. He was my granny's sister's son. He used to go down and sell little holy pictures. He went into Belfast one night and he sung the Paisley Shafts and he got 6 months for it. Sung the Paisley Shafts and he got 6 months for it. And when he come up here to visit, he hates to go back. He wouldn't go back to Belfast.
And who was Big Dan Kenny?
Oh, Dan was a big man. The better piece of like the back. Dan. Dan was a powerful big man. Big Dan Kenny. Yeah. Ah, man he was.
And what did he work at?
He was a... I think he was in the racing business, wasn't he, Dan? Oh, Dan was a big man. He always used to come to the hall every day and he'd roll up. Up there, Muddy Winters. You know what I'm going up for? Come on up, Dan, he used to say so. And he'd take up the mug and put it into the pot where he'd have all the chickens next boiling. And he used to say, look, Muddy, when I get a bowl of that soup into me, I'd fight. I'd fight with a brown bummer. I was a big man. They were all used to come up in the country in different parts and then they'd settle in Ashton, you know. They'd get a house in Ashton, they'd settle and then they'd be all in the neighbours. They'd everything in Ashton. Yeah. There was chicken people and hen people and anything you could talk about was in Ashton.
But now who was Jack Tarr?
Jolly Jack Tarr, I wish I was just telling you. Tommy Haley, the Coombe Street. He always had an old swag back. He used to go down and sell them swag. Like if you're talking, you know. And he used to call him Jack Tarr, Tommy Haley.
And what's swag?
Swag is a pony pictures, boot laces, pins and things. If you buy a load of them for a couple of coppers, you go to the street or down to the races selling them.
And what's tuggers, is it you say?
Tuggers is people goes out of a basket car. And they go all around the city, out to Kingstown and everywhere. And they knock at the door, and if you have any old clothes that you don't want, you give them for nothing. And if you have anything to sell, they'll buy it off you. And that's the fact that some of them selling over here, and they're very comfortable, on the hill in Parnell Street. Mm-hmm. The O'Keefe's, they were tuggers. Nearly every... They were all a hard-working family, everywhere. They were stick-breakers, sold sticks, sold papers, sold laces, and all everything in it. Everyone got a living out of it. And everything was real cheap in it.
Now it mentions Tommy Reynolds.
Tommy Reynolds. He used to sell there. Tommy Reynolds, he lived in Macy. What's he used to sell? I think he used to sell fruit. Tommy Reynolds used to sell fruit. I think he used to go around hawking fruit. That's when they used to go around hawking. No, he was a cockle man. He used to sell cockles. I remember him now. He used to come in the night time, him and another man. And when we'd be in bed, he'd be roaring in the middle of the night, maybe about 12 o'clock, large cocks. And when we'd hear him, my granny used to say, that's the boo man. And he's very much his voice, he put a head on the clothes. He used to sell in the middle of the night, he'd sell the cockles, basket on his head. Tommy loved this cockle man.
And it mentions in the song that he brought along his tin whistle.
Yeah.
He played the tin whistle.
Actually, they could play anything. She mixer used to play the tin whistle. Mixer used to put it all around the floor and the only children with. Don't get me a penny tin whistle. And he got the penny tin whistle, we'd be off to maybe playing the tin whistle and trying to play it with his nose.
Well, for eating we had plenty, as much as we could hold. We drank Brady's airplane porter till around the floor we rolled. In the midst of all the confusion, someone shouted for a song. And up jumped Mad Dunlopin' and sang, keep rolling your bottle along.
That place where they bought the porter, that was in Francis Lee, but they used to go to the favourite on the kiln, Lousy Head. Mr. Jolan, but they used to call him Lousy Head. Used to go into him for a loop line. And then there were Christmas, if you were all the year round with him, About Christmas, you get a present often. Well, the men would look for the whiskey, a pint of whiskey. But the women, they take up more to drink and get a pint of whiskey in the makings of a pudding. That's why my gill of water was only a penny.
Now, when you mention the loop line, what are you talking about?
The loop line is a 3/2 pint. You're going to get a pint, it used to be two pence. But when you go in, you get one of loop line for 3/2. Loop line porter. They sold it in that public house in Francis Street, that's what they used to buy.
That was Brandy's?
Yes, the loop line porter.
And that's where they got it that night
at the
Ragman's Ball?
That's where they got
the
night at the Ragman's Ball.
Did you ever drink it yourself?
Never in my life. I never smoked.
It didn't taste any different to normal porter, it was just cheap.
No, it was just the same. The only thing is, it wouldn't be a good head on it, you know. But many times I brought a loop line again, we went to me going, my grandfather's lunch. That time when they'd be getting their dinner, you could bring their dinner to them and walk. And they'd go into an old hall and sit down, they'd be knocking down their houses, you know. And we often went in and sat down and had, ate somewhere with a bowl with them. And we give them the 3/2. My granny said, here, that's your for your loop line and that's your penny for your bit of tobacco.
Do you know how the name came about? Did you ever hear anything about that?
No, I don't know how the name came about.
Now, you remember the loop line porter. What was that, Frank?
Well, I'll tell you, that was a 3/2 a pint over on the Butt Bar. It was called the Butt Bar. Over on Eden Quay, over there. I often drank it myself. Go in and get a pint for 3/2. That was the Butt Bar, they were called the loop line because of the loop going over from Perth Station.
The loop line railway?
Railway, now that's why it was called the loop line.
And did it taste any different to other porter?
No, it was better than the porter you're drinking now. Oh, man, you'd get that. You wouldn't be able to lift a tumbler that way. If you were lifting up your pint, you'd have to slide it off. The porter was so... It was so powerful. It was like varnish. What used to come down off of the point that drop used to go onto the table. And they all had mahogany tables in them days, and mahogany counters in them days. Well, the students that come along and they'd wipe with the cloth. And the more they'd wipe that with the more it was like varnish going onto the mahogany. Oh, man, that'd be glittering. It used to polish up glitter, but that was great porter in them days. Marvellous porter. You wouldn't get a pint like it now.
So when the war came, nothing happened to change it until about 1915. But a lot of the publicans in the poorer area reduced the price of the drink to, practically speaking, uneconomic factors of living. And they were called loop liners. And I very well remember Corcoran's in North King Street, because he was in a very low way. His sons afterwards bought the Angler's Rest in Knockmaroon. They've only recently, about 20 years ago, left it in Knockmaroon. But there was another one, had a son, a very pleasant young priest afterwards in Abbey Street. That was another pub which was a loop liner. And the loop liner was simply a pub that sold it at, I think, a penny or a halfpenny cheaper per pint, plain and double X. And they had such an enormous sale that when the war continued and Guinness rationed, and the big pubs, with all the influx of thousands of British soldiers here for training in the Marlborough Barracks and the Royal Barracks and Beggar's Bush and all the rest of it, that the drink was well nigh unobtainable. The brewery, as they called it, Guinness or Darcy's, wouldn't give more than the given quota. And the result is the men doing the big business would descend on the like of Corcoran and North King Street, or this man in Abbey Street, who I'll tell you his name later when I find it out, and offer them up to £2 and £3, I think, a keg or a tierce or whatever it was. And suddenly the prices of pubs began to soar, and that was the first lift. But that they were called loop liners, but they existed long before the war. I think a halfpenny on the pint of plain and a penny on the pint of Guinness, cheaper than any other place. And that was a big amount of money then.
And how many loop liners would there have been in Dublin?
Well,
what percentage of public houses?
Fortunately or unfortunately, I think my father was a very knowledgeable person on that line, and he reckoned there was about 24 of them at the trial.
And what's the relationship between the loop line bridge and the loop line port?
I never heard any association between the two with the loop line. Never. Never. I didn't. But the loop liner, for a man who cuts a price, I think it's a very reasonable name for him, isn't it? Huh? A loop liner? Huh? So maybe they call the bridge after the loop liners instead of... the bridge.
Port Al Dunlavin, yeah. He used to play the concertina, that what you call it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concertina, that what you call them things, concertina.
Not
a melodeon.
Yeah.
You know, the small round thing, he used to play that. And he used to sing all Irish songs. And the tans used to come round and knock the stuffing out and give him a few digs. Well, he'd go into a pub and he'd look round, he'd hear me beside him, what could be the other side, and he'd say, I wouldn't wash my feet and that stuff. He wouldn't drink porter, whiskey. He'd have a small whiskey. Dunlavin. He sang all over his songs. And the tans knocked out on him many times, they milled him, you know.
Why was he called Dunlavin?
He came from Dunlavin.
In County Wicklow?
Yeah, that's how he was called, Dunlavin.
And would he march up and down the street singing?
No, he sang outside the pubs playing too, in different places, you know. And then, when he collected a few bob or whatever it be, he'd, 11 is a small whiskey was then. He'd go in and he'd get the small whiskey. 11 is a point of stout and 11 is a small sweet, playing for those aims.
Did you ever hear any yarns about him or funny stories about him?
Not about Dunlavin, no.
No.
That's all I now remember. Where he lived, I don't even know. I don't think he ever lived in any place. Slept in halls. Them days, you know, they were all sleeping in halls all round, all them poor characters. Used to go around sleeping in halls then, and the people in the house would give them the cup of tea for their breakfast. He wore an old soft hat and an old dust coat, Dunlavin. He was a fairly tall man. All early songs.
And who was Dunlavin?
He was a man who used to go all around the country with a melodeon. And that was the first song he used to sing, We Are the Boys of Wexford, before it was hard in the hand. That was the first big Dunlavin. And he had the top coat, and I think it was on him from the time he was christened. And the Trilby hat. Great Irish man, supposed to be a great Irish man. Play his melodeon going around Dunlavin.
And they were all at the Ragman's Ball?
Every one of them was at it, every one of them. At the Ragman's Ball. Well, Tommy wrote it.
Now we all sat down to some ham parings and everything was quiet. I must say for broken noses we had a lovely night. Black eyes were there in great demand, not to mention split heads at all. So anyone wants to commit suicide, let them come to the Ragman's Ball.
Well now, Miss Byrne, what was the Ragman's Ball?
The Ragman's Ball was all about the neighbours and ashties. All about them. It was all about the liberty. Nobody else, no one in the Ragman's Ball was a stranger. Everyone in them was belonged to liberty and lived in the liberty.
And it actually took place?
It actually took place there.
And what was it, a party or a
hooli? It was a party, a hooli they gave. In one of the little two-story houses in Ashley's. They gave the party. Them was the houses I was telling you going to belong to. All along the side of Ashley's.
And what was Tommy's full name?
Thomas Winters.
And could you tell me a bit about Tommy?
Tommy's only going to tell you about Tommy. Tommy was a dipper for playing jokes on people. A great, loved music, loved life. Tom did. He'd be sitting down and he'd write a song on you. He was a lovely piano player. He could play piano with his feet. Tom was a great musician. All for life, Tom was. He was a hard chicken, Tom was. He was a great man for falling in sports, boxing or anything. There was a fight one night in the Olympia with Johnny Corden. Johnny Corden was a boxer. And during the fight, the fella failed him. And my Uncle Tommy jumped from the galley of the Olympia onto the ring. And his father-in-law was sitting in the crowd. And when he came home, he said, well, Johnny Corden was fouled in the fight tonight, but there's some effort needed, whoever he was. And if he's not dead, I don't know what to say. He jumped from the Olympia, the gallery, onto the footing. And there's Tommy, his son-in-law. He didn't know. Well, then when the elections had come around, all the men asked you to go in the gang in Kevin Street, New Street. Well, they'd hang out a dummy from one side of the street to the other and they'd stuff it. Well, if Rasher Budden was going up with Johnny Swain, the councillors, they'd be again one another to get into the corporation. And Tommy used to go around canvassing for the voting. And if you're not to judge on them, before the office would be open in the morning, even if you're in your skinny drag, you'd vote for them, once he'd be going for them. Well, one night they had a big rally, you know, to have it in the middle of New Street, where the fountain was, not there now, but there was a fountain there. And during the time they were going on, they had torches and tin cans with turf and oil on it. And some of them tried to set fire to Tommy. But he was a terrible character now. He used to do terrible things, even on my grandmother. Tommy was in the First World War. He left his car outside the recruiting office. He joined them. He worked in the cleansing department of the Dublin Corporation. And in 1915, coming home from work, he left his car outside of the recruiting office and went in and joined up. And we had an old dog, the name of Magzo, and she was always with Tommy. And she brought the car back to White Horse Yard. And when Tommy was killed in 1916, she was killed on the coombe with a car about 2 weeks after.
What were wakes and funerals like?
Oh, there's a hell yet a wake. A hell yet a wake it was. In the olden times, I often hear them saying before I was born, we had a Liberty Hearseman, the name of Colonel Grace. And if you couldn't afford to pay for a cab or to bring the corpse at Last in Heaven, well, he done the Liberty Hearseman, they done the carrying. They'd leave the house at 6 o'clock in the morning with the corpse and they'd land about 12 outside the Last in Heaven gate. And I needn't tell you, going along the corpse, we left out outside of a few public houses and they'd have a few scoops. Even if it was only a 3/8 loop liner, they'd have it. And then when they come home from the funeral, it'd be a holy. The yards believed in giving them a great send off.
And did you ever hear them talk of playing games at the wakes?
Spin the bottle and dab a fish. Oh, that is bad. But before my time, when there used to be wakes, that's where many a couple met one another and got married. Because everyone would be dressed up in their best, and it used to be a sorrowful wake, it'd be a sing song. Be like a hooly. And that's where a good many of them picked up with their husbands and got married. It was a comic. Same actually. When you go into the way where there was a carp, you'd have to shake the holy water and take the pinch of snuff. As the old people used to say, the snuff was recognised as the clay that you were going down into, and the holy water was a speed home.
And you mentioned earlier about burial and Ballyfermot is now.
At that time, there was anyone that couldn't afford to pay for a grave. They used to bring them out to Ballyfermot, a place called Bally Farm, they used to call it that time. And they'd bring them out, they'd go out the day before and dig the grave. And the next morning, they'd go out and bring the. If it was a child, it was put over the wall. And if it was a person, the gate would be open, the gate would be forced open to let them in. And it would be a holy then. The very minute they'd ask, where's the wake coming from? If they said the kiln of Mashties and all the pubs are closed down. Of course, they used to do a bit of rooney in it.
What was that, Rooney?
Rooney, and they go in and they call for the drink and they'd be waiting to see who was going to pay for it. And if they couldn't pay for it, everyone of them walked out. A man never got anything.
Oh, come all you party panelites from Cork Street and the Coombe. If you'll pay attention for a while, I'll tell you very soon. I'd like to sing a comic song, and I'll make no mistake. It's not about the right man's ball, it's all about his wake. Now you've all heard tell of a right man's ball, it was a funny sight. When one guy got stretched out through interfering in a fight, we went around collecting a subscription for to make, and we bought him a second-hand coffin, boys, just to respect his wake. Now we sent out invitations to the neighbours near and far. We sent for Big John Kelly, Blind Gord Whalen and Jack Tar. We sent for Mosco Conroy and her friend to bake some cake. For the boys, they all felt hungry on the night of the right man's wake. Now for eatables, we had plenty, we'd ham parings and pig's feet. We had spare ribs and knuckle bones, pig's cheeks from Townsend Street. Dan Kelly, he got hungry and he started on the cake. He got struck on the nose with a pig's cheek bone on the night of the right man's wake. Now there were buckets of loop line porter, it came from a well-known spot. Fair Lanigan was the disher out, assisted by his mot. Some tried to come the double event, sure it hadn't cost a make. For everything was got on the slate, for the night of the right man's wake. Now Suslam started to sing a song, that night in stately room. And against the rules he started a song called Sailing in My Balloon. Well, he only had a first verse sung when Callaghan, the well-known rake, sent him sailing through the window on the night of the right man's wake. Now up stood Paul O'Feeney, he considered himself a brick. He wanted to borrow an umbrella to play the three-card trick. When someone shouted that man is mad, throw him out or his neck will break. Does he think he's on the Baldoyle race course instead of a poor man's wake? Now the boys lay down to have a snooze. They slept with their clothes on. And when they awoke the following morn, they found the corpse had gone. Sure, he went through all their pockets and the contents of them to take. And he had bet for a few more hard chores to go to a right man's wake.
And who was Fair Lanigan? He was a chucker, he was the hander out of the loop line porter and his mot.
Lanigan. I don't remember him now. Of course, I suppose I knew him, but I didn't remember. They're all dead, so now. Jeez, I must be over 60 years dead.
Yeah.
How long is my Uncle Tommy dead? Since 1916. I tell you, that's a good space in that now, isn't that? And actually, that would have been well wrapped with that. Here in 1917, they started knock it down, and they were scattered everywhere. Some of them went to that joint as far as Ringsend and over the Creighton Street and all.
The singer of the Ragman's Wake, 85-year-old Frank Augusta, was born near Creighton Street. He remembers how he got the song.
They were going round the pub selling them in pamphlets, you know, leaflets. Well, they were selling them for a halfpenny each. And I bought one of them.
And how long ago was that?
Oh, that'd be about, over 70 years ago. I was very young at the time.
And do you remember the characters in the song? Who was Fair Lanigan?
Well, Fair Lanigan was a publican at the corner of Moss Street. Do you know when you go down Moss Street, on the left-hand side? Well, his pub was there on the corner there. And all the jockers used to assemble there. It's in that pub. And they'd be drinking and talking, and then they'd end up in a row and they'd take off their coats, come out into the street. There was daddlers in it, daddler ladies, and they'd be stuck into it. They used to take their shirts and all off and get out and have a set to. Well, there was a fountain there on the corner of Moss Street. And between Moss Street and Pool Bank Street. And this night I was going by, there was a row out of usual when I was at the pub. And your man makes a deadler sinner, makes a lunge at your man. And in hitting him, he hit the top of the fountain with his fist. And he put the fountain, the big horn top flying down the street. Now, there were terrible heavy men, good men that time. Their fist was like iron, because they worked so hard that they're taking in the coal boats, you know.
He hit Fellow Feeney, did he?
Huh?
Was it Fellow Feeney you mentioned there?
Yes.
And who was Fellow Feeney?
Well, I never knew Feeney personally, you know. I only knew the names around the neighbourhood. That's all I knew about them.
And who was Callaghan, the well-known rake?
Well, he lived in Pool Bank Street. He was married and he lived in Pool Bank Street. And he's dead and gone. Butsy Callaghan, that's what they call him. Butsy.
Now, do you remember ballad singers in the area?
Yes, I do. Remember Mary Ann McGaldy. Mary Ann Hazen, she was a ballad singer. She used to sing Mick McGilligan's daughter, Mary Ann. And that other song, she's a darling, she's a daisy, and she's everybody crazy. The Fully Unarmed of Irish Love was Mary Ann Malone. That was one, two of her ballad singers. And then there was another ballad singer who used to sing with her, used to play the banjo, the name of Macaroni. She used to play a ballad singer. She used to play a melodeon with her. A banjo. And then there was the Roylies. They were famous banjo players. One of them was coming home from England and went down with the Titanic. Prissy Roily. But of course she survived. She was saved. But she went down with the Titanic.
And would Tommy give a song like the Ragamuffin's Ball to the ballad singers?
Tom wrote any ballad ever Tom wrote, he gave to all the ballad singers. Because at that time they used to sing in the street with the ballads for a couple of coppers. And if he wrote the song in the morning, he was going to work, if he seen anyone he knew that sang ballads, he gave it to them. He gave away all his ballads. Lovely ballads he wrote. He says, as I said before, if he was alive now, he'd be a millionaire.
Colm O'Loughlin, in his notes to the song The Night of the Ragman's Ball, states that the Dublin printer Arrigo, who printed the song as a broadsheet ballad over 70 years ago, was persecuted by the notabilities mentioned in it, many of whom demanded largesse. Mrs. Byrne remembers this.
They come up complaining to me granny about him, and the woman that nursed him, Mags O'Conroy, when she went up, she said, she was sitting at the table, and she walked in, she was roaring and crying, she said, God forgive you, Tommy. And he looked at her, see, what's wrong with you, Mazzo? And she said, oh, God forgive you, I never thought you'd make little me. She said, yeah, I'm only making you famous, ain't I, putting your name on a song. And then Mrs. Boland and her husband, they come up to fighting my granny over it. And my grandfather said, let them, what about them? Should have become famous?